రామాయ రామభద్రాయ రామచంద్రాయ వేమసే రఘునాథాయ నాథాయ సీతాయ పతే నమః. అయోధ్య కాండ చాప్టర్ నంబర్ 42 కింగ్ దశరథ'స్ లామెంట్. ద రెసిటేషన్ బిగిన్స్ నౌ. The wretched monarch gazed after his banished son as long as the dust raised by the chariot wheels was seen afar. Curiously enough, the insensate dust cloud grew and grew, as if it said to itself in deep pity, "Let me do whatever I can to enable the poor king to gaze after the darling of his heart yet a while." And when it vanished from view, Dasharatha heaved a deep sigh as if his soul was rushing after Rama and fell like a log where he stood. Kaushalya sprang forward and raised him by his right arm. Kaikeyi, whose hopes and fears were bound up in Bharata, stood at his left, but never put herself out to support the poor husband whom she had lured to his doom. In his relations with everyone, high or low, Dasharatha was, by nature, the soul of politeness and respect. His heart was ever set upon dharma, and he followed in the footsteps of the righteous and the just. Yet his unbounded hate towards Kaikeyi maddened him quite, and he cursed her loud and deep. "Avaunt, foul fiend, touch me not! Take your hateful presence away from my sight. You are nothing to me, no wife, no kin. I have no art, no part with those that depend upon you. I am no longer their master, nor they my servants. Here do I renounce you once and for all. Every comfort and benefit I might derive from you, through you, I may have in a most unfortunate hour of my life taken you to wife before the god of fire. If Bharata should ever sit in my place and his heart rejoice thereat, my deepest curse shall dog him forever, and the funeral obsequies he performs for me shall not reach me." Then Kaushalya supported her lord and husband, for was he not the father of her darling Rama, all covered with dust and dirt, and slowly they dragged their weary feet to the forsaken palace. As one who foully slays a holy Brahmana for his money, as one who clasps to his breast a blazing fire, so did the righteous Dasharatha writhe in supreme agony at the thought of Rama, the life and light of his sere old withered age, now wending his way to the forest, clad in the garb of homeless hermits. Every now and then he stopped and turned his lackluster eyes on the traces of the envious chariot that bore his son away from his sight. And, like the lord of the night, looked he in the fell grip of Rahu. He recollected that his son would, by then, have gone out of the city and raised a cry, "Here do I see the traces of the car that bears my child away to the lonely wilds, but the great-souled one I see not. His fair body, spread with richly prepared sandal paste, his proud limbs reclined on the flower-soft cushions, he used to sink into the arms of welcome sleep, while sweet visions of beauty fanned him gently. And he, my darling, would fling his wearied limbs tonight, heaven knows where, under a tree or a shrub with a log of wood or a rough slab for a pillow. As a lordly elephant after his slumbers on the mountainside, my Rama would heave piteous sighs and arise from his dusty couch, all unmeet for him. The dwellers of the forest will behold the sad spectacle of the lord of the earth now wandering about the forest, homeless and destitute. Janaki, the beloved daughter of King Janaka, will undergo nameless torture as she walks along the thorny forest path. Born to lead a life of perfect happiness and comfort, she is utterly unmeet to be named in the same breath with privation or misery. Never have her eyes been accustomed to the rough forest sights, and she would naturally tremble in affright at the howls and roars of the denizens thereof, that are enough to raise one's hairs off his head. Kaikeyi, unparalleled sinner, I cannot live on even for a moment torn from Rama's side. Slay me outright, and reign long and happily over this realm, in widowed pomp, your hopes and dreams realized and gratified." So wailed the forlorn king, And as men who turn their sad steps homeward after they have consigned to the cruel flames one near and dear to them, Dasharatha and those with him enter the gloomy and ill-omened Ayodhya. From time immemorial, the citizens, young and old, used to throng the streets and the squares to catch a glimpse of the emperor as he passed along. But now it was a veritable city of the dead. Stores and stalls, halls and fanes were all closed. All had gone after Rama, everyone who could drag his limbs along. There lay along the high roads only such as had fainted away from grief or felt themselves at the portals of death through being deprived of the sight of Rama. But for these, the city was utterly abandoned. Dasharatha himself, pierced to the heart with hopeless grief, was doomed to gaze on men and women, birds and beasts, sink under a crushing sorrow, their hearts away with Rama as he was rapidly nearing the dark forest. And so he passed through the portals of the palace like the wintry sun engulfed in a bank of dark clouds. As some wide deep pool, teeming with fierce serpents and shunned with terror by all, is invaded by Garuda, the mighty bird, who frees it of its deadly denizens and renders it a safe resort to one and all. Even so, Ayodhya, the impregnable, which the foes never even dreamt of approaching, for was there not Rama to guard it, was now free of access to any and everyone, now that Rama, Lakshmana and Sita had turned their backs upon it. Then Dasharatha, in faint and indistinct words, moaned, "Take me hence as quickly as you can to the palace of Kaushalya, the fortunate mother that bore Rama in her womb. Grief and remorse would tear at my heart in any other place." His attendants respectfully guided him to the apartments of Kaushalya and stood guard over them. The king flung himself on the flower-soft cushions but could find no relief to his tortured limbs. The rayless gloom hung over the palace like a moonless sky now that Rama, Lakshmana and Sita were not there to brighten it with their presence. Dasharatha gazed about him. Mighty of heart though he was, he flung his arms above his head and cried, "Ah, Rama, you had the heart to leave me here a prey to grief and misery. Thrice happy are they to whom it is given to clasp you in fond embrace when you come back from your grievous exile." Meanwhile, the dark night came on apace, terrible even as the night of dissolution. The billows of grief rose mountain high and engulfed the poor old king, who turned a despairing eye to Kaushalya that was nigh and said, "My dear, the light has departed from my eyes and I see not where you stand. Pray touch me well with your hands. My eyes have gone after Rama and have not yet returned. They have been wont to gaze in rapturous bliss, never satisfied, upon my darling son, begot after 60,000 years of fasts and vows. His beauty has ensnared them. They have now gone after him, never to return. Though denied the privilege of beholding him now, it was yet possible for them to look upon you, his fortunate mother. But alas, they have deprived me even of this joy. I should, of a truth, look upon the fair face of Rama to wash myself of the dark sin of having looked at Kaikeyi. But since it is now denied to me beyond hope, I trusted to see your face at least. Ah, miserable wretch that I am, even that cup of hope is dashed from my lips. The presence of our senses is attested by the contacting objects of perception. Surely I have lost the power of sight now that I cannot see you, and I wish to make sure whether my sense of touch is not lost to me likewise. Kindly feel me with your hands, and I will judge whether I possess that faculty or no. Further, my parched frame would find, I'm sure, instant relief if soothed by your hands that fondled and nourished my beloved Rama, whose absence is the cause of all my woe. Rama, I may not be able to see you, but equal joy will be mine if I see you, if I touch you, if I talk to you, whom Rama calls his mother. Let no dark suspicion cloud your heart and whisper, oh, he held secret counsel with Kaikeyi once before, and it ended in exiling my son Rama to the dreary woods. Today he pretends all of a sudden to love me as he never did before. I fear some greater evil is on its way to me. Pray, extend your forgiveness to me as one deluded by folly and cupidity, and touch me with your hands. Kaushalya then approached the stricken king, took her seat by him, and wailed grievously, her burning sights punctuating, as it were, her pitying accents. Mangalam Kaushalendraya Mahaniya Gunabdiye Chakravarti Dhanurjaya Sarva Bhaumaya Mangalam.